Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Blog and News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest tonight is author Bill Bean. Bill has released to say the least, a very strange book, Dark Force. And it's a description of his life as a teenager between 1970 and 1980. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on with you.
Well, it certainly is an honor to talk to you. Can we start with a little biography? Who is Bill Bean? But in keeping with the great tradition of Alfred Hitchcock, let's avoid the 1970s for right now.
Well, Bill Bean is a walking miracle man. That's who I am. God has truly blessed me and delivered me from evil. I wouldn't wish some of the experiences I've had in my life on anyone. I've had a plethora of experiences since we moved from that house in 1980, and I can surely say to you that I know the awesome power of God and, unfortunately, the vulgar power of Satan as well. And I can never thank God and praise God enough for delivering me from that situation. So I feel that my book is really a calling. I believe God called me to share my story with people in hopes of helping many along the way here, and that's exactly what I'm doing. This is my life's work now, to reach out and help others who have gone through these sorts of traumatic experiences.
Is this a full-time job, or...?
It certainly is turning that way. You know, I do work a regular job. It doesn't look like that'll be going for much longer because this is evolving into my primary career. And I can't tell you how many hours I log sitting in front of the computer answering emails. I get emails from people all over the country and in different parts of the world, and I'm up every single night till 4 or 5 a.m. answering those emails.
Is Dark Force your first foray into the book world?
Yes, it is, Simon, and I never in a million years thought that I would be an author of a book because due to the tragic circumstances of my story, I have no formal education. I'm ashamed to tell you that I have an eighth grade education. I had to quit school early after the sudden passing of my mother, who died at the age of 44 from a cerebral hemorrhage. And so, again, that's a miracle from God. Although I am not formally educated, I am not a dumb man by any means, and I'm just very thankful that I was able to sit down, and I really relied heavily in my faith in God to get me through this because it was very difficult for me to sit down and write this book and to place myself back into some of those horrible situations again.
Dark Force is some heady stuff. It delves into areas that are much more akin to a Stephen King novel than what most of us have experienced in real life. Give us a thumbnail sketch of your teen years.
Well, actually, when I was 4 years old when we moved into the house in 1970, and I could say this, by the age of 13, I'd had my first battle with evil, and God was truly working through me on that day, and I had an actual authentic battle with the evil entities that occupied our home and tormented us. So when I say that I know the power of God and the power of evil, I mean what I say. I truly know it.
One of the aspects of the book that came through again and again was the fact that even though the family was falling apart, your father had succumbed to alcoholism. In fact, he actually left the family. He couldn't stand it anymore. Your mother was so reluctant to move away from the house. I have a couple of theories, but I'd love to hear what yours is.
Okay. Well, first of all, my father, his story is just so sad and tragic in itself. He was a very good man and a very gifted man and should have been a very successful man. And unfortunately, his life went a different path. And as his life went into a downward spiral, that trickled down onto us, and our lives were plunged into this downward spiral as well. My mother was very sick, very ill the entire time she lived in the house. She suffered from high blood pressure, which led to a series of strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. And she couldn't work. Now, my father, a man that I saw as a heroic figure, had suddenly turned into this raging alcoholic and began to physically abuse my mother from 1973 to 1975, nearly killing her on several occasions. And I'm sorry to say that I absolutely hated my father. From that point on, thank God I was able to forgive him. Before his death in 1987, he was shot to death. And so my mother suffered greatly from illness and from physical abuse and then from actual physical abuse from these demonic entities. My father left us in 1975, and when he left, he wasn't sending any money home. And I'm ashamed to tell you, Simon, that we actually had to go on welfare, and we ended up losing the house, and a man bought the house in a public auction, knew of my mother's circumstances, and let us stay there on a pay-as-you-can-when-you-can basis. Now, my mother was a very proud and private woman. She did not want to burden her mother or her sister, and both of them were begging for us to come and stay with them. Now, my grandmother and step-grandfather had a one-bedroom apartment, so my mother wasn't going to burden them with us. And my aunt had 8 children and a husband, so my mother was not going to burden her as well. So that is why we stayed for as long as we did. And then after a period of time, as I say, in Dark Force, I feel like we had become prisoners in a POW camp, very desensitized to the amount of abuse. And I'll tell you, the mental abuse that we endured was far worse than the physical abuse we endured from these demonic entities. So we became very, very desensitized and very cold towards each other, very zombie-like, if you will. So that is the primary reason. And after this time went on, I believe that my mother was actually bound by these entities to the house.
Hmm.
So that is why we stayed.
I'm sure that you must have had many occasions where you were on your own going, why are we still in this house?
Yeah. Well, I used to sit outside quite a bit after 1977, and I would look up at the sky quite a bit and just say, take me. You know, I wanted to be taken out of the situation. It was just awful, and a situation I would wish on no one.
You mentioned that the house was foreclosed on, went to public auction, and a gentleman picked it up, understood the circumstances, and opted to allow you all to stay there, pay me what you can. Was he a good Samaritan, or was this a harbinger of evil?
Isn't that an interesting question? I guess you could say a little bit of both, but isn't it funny how this situation worked out to where we were to stay. So if in fact, how can I say it? I'm sure the man had a good heart, but on the other hand, I believe these supernatural forces were at work to ensure that we stayed right there in the house. So a little bit of both, Simon.
It's many years, you know, since these events. Do any of your family still have encounters with the paranormal?
Well, I don't have much family left, to be honest with you. I'm still very close with my brother and sister, and my Uncle Cliff is in Florida, and my Uncle John is here local in Maryland. That's about it. Aside from a few cousins, that's about all I have left, and we are very close. But as far as them having any experiences, I can't tell you because we don't discuss it much. My siblings are still greatly affected by this, and they don't share the same faith that I do, unfortunately. And for me, I can never say it enough how God has delivered me from all that garbage. But for them, they're kind of in a different place. And I hope and pray that one day God can work a miracle for them as well, because they've been very tormented over the years, and tormented in the sense where they have problems with relationships and bouts of depression and things of that nature. Now, we all go through those types of things, but I have no doubt they are scarred just as I am from the amount of abuse we sustain in that house. So it's very, very difficult, and I feel very sorry for both of them because they definitely have these issues. So we really don't discuss it a whole lot, and I'll be honest with you, after we left that house in 1980, we didn't discuss it at all until 2005 when I was approached by the Discovery Channel for a haunting show that was done about my story. That aired September 7, 2006. And so we'd gone all those years without really ever sitting down and discussing anything. And it was very difficult to do. And it really didn't come up until we were over my brother's house one Saturday afternoon, and then we had talked about it for the first time in all those years, and they had reminded me of things that I had long forgotten. So many things happened that there were things that I had forgotten, and they reminded me of. And it was kind of therapeutic to sit down and kind of get some of this stuff off of our chest. And they were very reluctant to participate in the haunting show. And I said, fine, that's no problem at all. And then they decided after we'd had this discussion that they were going to participate, and they did.
I think we probably need to bring our listeners up to speed on exactly what happened. Not in great detail, but I mean, You heard things, you saw things, you were physically abused. Not just you, but I mean the entire family.
Correct. That's correct. We moved into this three-bedroom ranch-style home in Glen Burnie, Maryland in 1970, and it was semi-dilapidated. My father was a master carpenter, and he saw this as a home that he could restore, and he did. My mother was the first to have an experience in the house, and it was while she was unpacking boxes in the living room. And again, like you just said, it started out as a feeling of presence. She thought that my father was sneaking back in to play a joke on her, and she spun around, and nothing was there. So she was taken aback by it, but she was able to collect herself and go back to doing what she was doing. And then it wasn't long after that that one of the bedroom doors slammed shut, and that was enough to make her go outside. So that's where it started, and then it gradually escalated into these violent physical attacks on us by these entities. And we also had a priest involved. The last 16 months we lived in the house, a priest was involved. And unfortunately, the activity grew even more intense and more violent with his involvement. And it got to the point where he was bringing mason jars full of holy water to the house.
I'm curious, because it's not mentioned in the book. Did your parents ever attempt to talk to the previous owners of the house?
To my knowledge, Simon, I want to say no. Now, I was very young. I was 4 years old when we moved in, so I can't say for certain if they'd ever spoken, you know, to the previous owners about anything. I can tell you this, that I recall vividly at the age of four being very frightened at the first sight of the house. The house just has a very ominous look and feel about it, and it still does to this day. So I can't say with any sort of certainty that they ever had any discussions with the previous owners, and certainly you know, nothing about any type of supernatural paranormal activity. But I will tell you this, that after the Discovery Channel show aired in 2006, I was approached by a young man named Edward Hardin, who lived there with his family from 1991 to 1994, I believe. And he told me that they had many supernatural paranormal events in the house as well. He said that they were not attacked physically like we were, but they did have many strange and bizarre paranormal events occur in the house over the years that they lived there.
Wow.
And I'll also tell you that I was once offered $50,000 to return to the house with a camera crew for a reality show, and I turned that down.
Actually, I think I would agree with you on that decision. You know, it doesn't sound like a great idea to me.
No, and I'm not a wealthy man. Believe me, my wife and I could use the money, but I don't need money that badly, and I never will.
The house itself, as far as I could tell, pretty normal house, built when, in the 1940s?
That's correct, Simon. Yeah, it's after a close friend of mine did the research on the area, and he said that those homes were built in the 40s as military-style housing for the returning soldiers.
Right.
From the war.
Do you have any inkling why it would be this house? Is there some connection to it being on an old burial ground, or, you know, anything?
That's a very good question, and I have an answer for it. First, let me say that the story really goes further back than 1970. After speaking with my mother's siblings and other family members over the years, they had paranormal activity going on in their childhoods, my mother's and her siblings. And I believe it was something of a curse, if you will, that was on her side of the family. And we've had many, many tragedies and hardships to family members over the years. In the back of Dark Force is a list of some of those tragedies and sudden passings and untimely deaths. But I believe something negative was going on way back then, and I believe that negative force actually led us to that house where evil was already manifested. So I've often said that my family was in the middle of a two-pronged attack from evil, and that house is not the only house that has had paranormal, supernatural problems. Again, after that A Haunting show aired, I was contacted by many people in the area saying that they too were having problems in their homes. And again, the same friend of mine, John D. Romine, who wrote a book on the area called The Enigma of the Wishing Rock, lists in the book this gigantic boulder-like structure that's located 2 miles south from the house as this wishing rock structure that Indian tribes used to gather and worship at, saying that it had supernatural powers. So if, in fact, there is anything to this, then it's quite possible that some sort of vortex or gateway or something was opened up around this wishing rock structure, and something did come through and has greatly affected the entire area of the Herondale-Glenmurnie area.
You mentioned a part of the book that I actually found absolutely riveting. What has happened to your close family? Why don't you share with us some of the things? It's pretty horrific.
Yeah, it really is. And again, it's on both sides, but my mother's side just, I guess, is more prevalent. But just the simple fact of my parents, the way they passed.
Actually, let's go back a little bit further.
Uh-huh.
The motorboat accident.
Yeah, that was in 1957. My grandfather, Edmund Harvey, they had gone on a picnic or whatever at this Point Pleasant Beach, and he was an avid swimmer, very good swimmer from what I'm told. I never met him, obviously. I was born in 66. But as he entered these waters, he looked, and I believe it was to his youngest daughter, and said, "I'll see you in your dreams," or something to that extent. And, a tragedy occurred where he was apparently struck by the engine of this boat. And my uncle, his son, John Harvey, vividly recalls having to go out and retrieve his father's body. You know, he went out with, I believe, my father and some others in this boat, and they vividly recall retrieving his body out of the water, and just an awful thing. So it kind of began there, and there has been many, many untimely deaths and tragedies on both sides of the family. In 1971, October 5th, 1971, my Uncle Clifford, who is my father's brother, had a wife named Colleen, and she died giving birth on October 5th, 1971. She actually died from an infection. Something was left inside of her. Her bladder had ruptured, and they'd done an emergency surgery to repair it, and something was left inside, and an infection set in, and she died from that infection. Well, my mother died 10 years to the day, October 5th, 1981. She was 44 years of age, and she died from a cerebral hemorrhage. And she also died 2 months and 2 days after the sudden passing of her mother, Dora Harvey, our beloved grandmother, who died from a sudden series of heart attacks. Now, I have no doubt, based on what I witnessed and experienced in that home, that this demonic presence greatly contributed to their deaths. No question about it, because both were attacked in the house, and just the amount of stress and strain that my mother was under on a constant basis, I have no doubt that contributed to her death. None of us ever slept well in the house at all, Simon. Very seldom did we ever hardly get any sleep. I missed a lot of school as a child.
Your sister, I can't recall her name right off the top
Patty.
Of my head.
Yeah,
right.
Patty.
She left home at age 16, and I recall she's quoted as saying something like, "It didn't matter who I married, it was a way out."
Correct. That is correct. And she really... Now, she was 13 at the time when we moved into the house, so she spent very little time in that environment, thank God for her. And she does have some very good recollections of her childhood, because her childhood was not in that house. So she had some very happy memories of being a little girl with my parents. And so she only spent a couple years in that house, thank God for her. And so she was able to escape it a bit more than we were able to.
You talk about her bedroom. It didn't matter what time of the year, it was always cold.
That is correct. We called that room the back bedroom, and the way this, and I know we're kind of running out of time, so I'll try and be as brief as possible. you would walk in through the front door to the house and enter into the living room, and then you would make a right down a long hallway, and that's where the three bedrooms and the bathroom were located. And my sister's room was the last room on the left, and we called that the back bedroom. And that room was always cold, no matter what. And after my sister left, that door would often open and slam by itself for many repetitions. And on many occasions, my mother would just scream out profanities at these things to stop. That is the kind of mental stress and abuse that we were under.
These events happened, 4 decades ago. And one of the questions that the naysayers will have, and trust me, there's lots of them out there, where's the physical proof? One of the things mentioned in the book is the painting that got altered. Do you still have that?
I do not, Simon. It's my best guess would be that it was left behind. We left the house in 1980, and when we finally did leave, it took something drastic for us to leave, and we did. And when we did, we left most of the decor. The only thing that we took with us were our personal belongings. So it's my best guess that that thing was left behind. And it's certainly something that my mother would not have wanted to take with us or anything like that. It was very horrific. It was an altered painting of a three-year-old child that was seemed to have suddenly come to life. And it looked like the eyes were looking at you and following you, and the mouth had suddenly become downturned and sinister-looking with almost like a snarl type of thing. It just gives me chills to even visualize that portrait in my mind.
Where can people get copies of Dark Force? And do you have some sort of website?
Yeah, and that is the easiest place to order the book, www.billbean.net. And when you go there, you'll see the book on the home page, and you can just click on the PayPal button and instantly order your copy of Dark Force. And I want to thank everyone out there for such support. It's been overwhelming and tremendous. I have been, it's an outpouring of love from people and support. And as you say, there may be naysayers out there, but I hear from them very seldom. You know, it's a lot of positive response and reaction, and I thank everyone for that.
So, that kind of killed my next question.
Sorry.
I'm guessing that you are getting some positive feedback about Dark Force.
It's tremendous. And again, this is my life's work. I believe God has called me to do this. And I give lectures all over the country. I'm hoping that I'll expand that into Europe in a few months. I have had an offer to go speak in England, and I certainly hope to do that. And it's my life's work. It's all I want to do with my life. And it's just knowing that this is what I'm supposed to do, and it's all about helping people. And my book really has had a positive impact on many, many people, and I've had just tons of messages saying that. So it is a blessing, and I thank God and praise God for it.
That's great. If you do plan on heading to England, maybe we should talk, and I'll give you some voice coaching lessons.
That would be fantastic, Simon. Maybe you could go along with me.
Well, let's talk publishing just for a second. I have no idea how many authors I've talked to over the years, and just bring up the word publishing and they cringe. Most of them off air have very, very, very sour grapes about the adventure, you know, agents, publishers, editors, etc. What are your thoughts?
It's a learning experience, that's for sure. I was so naive to all of it. I had no clue how any of it worked. And it's very, very difficult for anyone who aspires to be an author. I can tell you now, it's a lot of hard work. It is a lot of hard work. And then not only hard work on creating your book and having it presentable, but then very hard work to secure the proper publisher and publishing agent and things of that nature. I'm very blessed right now to have Diane Garris of Journeymakers Publishing, and it's just wonderful because it's so much easier, and I've had other publishers and other experiences, and in the beginning it was very, very difficult, but I'm at a place now with the book, and I have the right company with the book now, and it's just a blessing. And, again, I'm very thankful for it, but it can be a nightmare.
Oh, I think nightmare probably is not the word.
Yeah.
I've heard it called much worse.
Yeah, and, you know, people sometimes have this misperception of, okay, I'll write a book and I'm going to make $1 million and things of that nature. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. There's a lot of hands out there that takes their cut and their percentage out of things, so authors who are aspiring to be overnight millionaires are they're going to get a big surprise. That's all I can say.
There's a saying, you know, if you build it, they will come. And
I agree.
Alas, many authors fall into that category. They think the hard bit is writing the book. No. The easy bit. Yeah, the easy bit is writing the book. The hard bit is getting it in front of the eyeballs.
Yeah, it's so competitive because if you think about it, there are a million books out there, and the content, there are a million people that have content that matches up with whatever, you know, aspiring authors want to write about. It's just amazing. It's a very, very competitive thing. And my best advice is to have thick skin and to really stay committed to what you're doing, because otherwise people are just going to give up and say, forget about it.
I'll give you a quick statistic. In 2008, Boca handed out 300,000 new ISBNs, as in 300,000 new titles were published.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And there you go. That's a very, very competitive market right there, and you really have to have something that's going to just grip and affect people in such a manner that it's going to stir the masses, and that is either that or you're going to have top-notch PR people, and that's going to cost a fortune to just go and saturate your story to the media and places like that. So it's one or the other.
Yeah. Hey, whoa. It's just an ugly, ugly industry to be involved in. I like it. I just do the reading.
Well, I certainly thank you for your review, and I really am blessed. I'm in a situation right now to where I feel that I'm on the other side of it, and believe me, I have paid my dues with all of this, and I have put in endless hours, and it's very hard work, and just the fact of sitting here answering all these emails, which is a blessing, but that's like a full-time job in itself. And when you combine the other aspects of what I'm doing with that, it's just it's tremendous. But again, God gives me the strength to carry on because this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. So I see it as a blessing.
Bill, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me tonight. I think this has been a wonderful, wonderful interview, and I do want to wish you all of the best with selling copies of Dark Force. I know that a lot of our listeners will be running out there to buy copies. So my very, very best for you, your family, and whatever the future might hold.
Well, thank you so much, Simon. It's been a pleasure and a very enjoyable interview. And I look forward to talking with you again sometime. And God bless you and your family. And I hope that we can keep in touch.
Oh, we certainly will. This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a great evening. And I am sure we will have another program coming up in the next few days. Good night.